From the first epistle of St. Peter, chapter 2. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people, that you may declare your wonderful deeds of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people. Well, amidst the relentless reports of warfare and turmoil and the threat of terrorism, and an economy that's seeking another jumpstart, more or less successfully, perhaps better in the future, or maybe not. Nice to have a little good news this week, wasn't it? 33 guys got out of the mine, and they're safe. Those 33 miners 3 months ago, were just 33 guys that did every day what we more or less seek to do. Get up, do what we're about, do it as well as we can, go home, end the day more or less anonymously, except to the people who care about us. And all of a sudden something happens, completely beyond their control, that puts their situation at the forefront of the international news. And now, 70 days later, 33 guys, for the rest of their lives, will have more or less as a prefix to their first name, former Chilean, now rescued miner, their name. It will forever characterize who they are. It will be their identity. That's not all that unusual. Someone who is awarded the Nobel Prize. Every day of their lives henceforth, that's sort of the prefix of their first name. Nobel Prize winner, Academy Award winner, Olympic gold medalist. None of us are likely to have any of those things happen to us, or even something similarly renowned. We hope that the stars don't line up, that we find ourselves on the international news for circumstances beyond our control, whether it be through something in a mine, or something in the air, or something anywhere. We are mostly just who we are most of the time. But that's an interesting question. Who are we most of the time? Who are we pretty much all the time? Well, we're many things. We are, to put it bluntly, we are actors. We are people who are in relationships with other people, close personal ones, peripheral ones, relationships with people we don't know very well, students, who have expectations of us. We are people who live up to the expectations of others. It's even a subtle research technique. If you want to figure out how to predict the behavior of a person or a category of people, you don't have to talk to them, you don't have to see them, you don't have to lay eyes on them, you don't have to have any interaction with them at all. If you interview the 6 most important people in their lives and simply ask them, you know so-and-so? How do you expect them to live their lives? Chances are that's a good predictor of how they do. We tend to meet the expectations of the people in our lives. In other words, we play a role, we read a script, sometimes quite literally, we live up to others' expectations as though we were actors on a stage. Make no mistake about this, I am in full costume playing a role. There are things that I will say in this context and in this role that I won't say in other places. There are things that I will never say in this role. But all of us carry labels. We have jobs. Tied to them are expectations. That of parent, child, spouse, grandparent, lover, employee, employer. And we wear those labels in sequence, sometimes interchangeably throughout the course of a day. Sometimes throughout the course of a day, our new role requires a costume change and a readjustment of the script. We put forward what we wish others to see, and by extension, we keep some stuff in the back. We are, and this is reasonable, we are actors. Of course, once we know that, it's helpful to understand that there's a level of not phoniness necessarily, but artificiality and scripting and sculpting that goes with what we do and what we become. So it keeps our ego in check in some sense. And I think that that's a useful thing. I know that this is a role. I know that it's not all of what I am and who I'm about. And some of what I am and some of what I am about, I'm just simply not going to tell you. It stays in the back. Because we're not only actors. We're also sinners. Paul pointed this out. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. This is not a news flash. There are things that we have done in our lives. Things that we have left undone. Things that we couldn't prevent. Things that we could have prevented and chose not to. That characterize the history of our lives. And some of that stuff, you know, locked in a secret vault someplace that, you know, on our worst day, we might jump in and wallow around in for a while. If we really want to feel lousy about ourselves, that's a good way to do it. And everybody's got a place where they can go to do that. Why they would choose to escapes me, except for the fact that we know it's true. And once we know it's true, not only does it keep our ego in check, it might make us a little more tolerant toward others, because Paul doesn't make a distinction. He said, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Yeah, but mine aren't quite as bad as that guy over there. Well, how many does it take? How many sins does it take to put you out of bounds of the one who created you and the heavens and the earth? All he gave us was 10 rules. It doesn't seem like it would be that hard to keep them, would it? And you go down the list and the coveting part, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, the worldwide economy depends on our coveting other things. Yeah, but, well, there's that part about homicide. I haven't done that. Okay, one. And then Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not kill. But I say unto you, anyone who says, you fool, shall be liable to hell of fire. Well, that's okay. I just say, you idiot. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. It perhaps at least has there's a chance that we could become more tolerant when we understand it that way. We are actors, we are sinners. And it's even more profound than that. The things that we do or fail to do or can't prevent or choose not to prevent are more than just behavioral aberrations. They reflect a broader understanding of what sin is. Sin is a condition of estrangement. It's not just, it isn't even most importantly, a list of those things we do that are inappropriate or unseemly. They're a reflection of a condition of our being separated from the one who created us. Now the reason for this is told in story and fable, whether it was Pandora in the box or Adam and Eve in the garden, it doesn't matter. But our initial condition of having been created by a benevolent and loving God and placed in a perfect spot no longer exists. We are estranged, and God is about the business of bringing us back one unto another and unto Him. Christianity gives us the unique feature of how God has chosen to do that through the atoning death of Jesus. The cross is the bridge. But we're still a work in progress. We're still a work in progress. So who we are is not only a reflection of our acting ability, the reality of our sinfulness. We need this little note from Peter, who's preaching early on, saying that we are God's own people. Our relationship to God has no more anything to do with our behavior. It has to do with what God chooses to be about in spite of our behavior. This notion of unconditional love is almost foreign to us. Almost. Except when a child sees you at the end of a miserable day and puts out their arms. They don't care how lousy your day was. They don't even care if your day was lousy because of things that you did. All they care about is that they see you, they love you, and you belong to them. You belong to them. The best of best friends will love you not if, but anyway. Parents have to, and they mostly do. They mostly do gladly. Not because of what you do or what you fail to do, but because of who you are. Who you are. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood. A sports fan from Pittsburgh called into ESPN Radio this week discussing Ben Roethlisberger, who is the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers and will be playing his first game in the NFL season today. Not because the NFL season starts today. It started today for Ben Roethlisberger because he's been suspended for the first four games of the season because of unseemly behavior. He's not the first athlete. He won't be the last. He's not even the only current athlete that is under scrutiny by the press for unseemly behavior. And the caller to ESPN Radio said bluntly, Ben Roethlisberger is a jerk, but he's our jerk. He's our jerk. You know, I can't imagine it any more clearly than that when God looks at us on our worst day or even on our best day, which is about half-baked, and said, you know what, that person, that church, that community, that country, they're jerks and scoundrels. But they're my jerks and scoundrels. They belong to me. And as long as that's true, there's a half a chance that they will begin to act in ways that are at least closer to their understanding of that identity. Yeah, we're actors, and we try to put our best foot forward. That we're sinners is no newsflash. It helps, I think, to know that everybody else is in the same boat, and there really isn't any, well, how big is your list and how big is mine? One on the list is too many, so let's give each other a break. Because jerks and scoundrels, though we may be from time to time, maybe more especially so one day as compared to the next, we're God's jerks and scoundrels. We belong to him, a chosen race, a royal priesthood, God's own people. Amen.